J.M. Barrie, The Short Stories. Peter Pan is a classic story. The Admirable Crichton is a classic play. And here in this volume are two classic short stories. They are certainly of their day and perfect pieces of their craft. And really that's not surprising, for J.M. Barrie was a writer of great note. Short stories are often overlooked as being the poor, underdeveloped relative of a greater work. But from writers of the calibre of Barrie, this is just not so. He picks stories and creates characters that drive, meld and create pages that in their numerically shorter length are in fact the perfect length. Our stories are read for you by Richard Mitchley.
The Inconsiderate Waiter by J.M. Barrie. Frequently I have to ask myself in the street for the name of the man I bowed to just now, and then, before I can answer, the wind at the first corner blows him from my memory. I have a theory, however, that those puzzling faces which pass before I can see who cut the coat all belong to club waiters. Until William forced his affairs upon me, that was all I did know of the private life of waiters, though I have been in the club for 20 years. I was even unaware whether they slept downstairs or had their own homes. Nor had I the interest to inquire of other members, nor they the knowledge to inform me. I hold that this sort of people should be fed and clothed and given airing and wives and children, and I subscribe yearly, I believe, for these purposes. But to come into closer relation with waiters is bad form. They are club fittings, and William should have kept his distress to himself, or taken it away and patched it up like a rent in one of the chairs. His inconsiderateness has been a pair of spectacles to me for months. It is not correct taste to know the name of a club waiter, so I must apologise for knowing William's, and still more for not forgetting it. If again to speak of a waiter is bad form, to speak bitterly is the comic degree of it. But William has disappointed me sorely. There were years when I would defer dining several minutes that he might wait on me. His pains to reserve the window seat for me were perfectly satisfactory. I allowed him privileges, as to suggest dishes, and would give him information, as that someone had startled me in the reading room by slamming a door. I have shown him how I cut my finger with a piece of string. Obviously, he was gratified by these attentions, usually recommending a liqueur. And I fancy he must have understood my sufferings, for he often looked ill himself. Probably he was rheumatic, but I cannot say for certain, as I never thought of asking, and he had the sense to see that the knowledge would be offensive to me. In the smoking room we have a waiter so independent that once, when he brought me a yellow chartreuse and I said I had ordered green, he replied, "No, sir, you said yellow." William could never have been guilty of such effrontery. In appearance, of course, he is mean, but I can no more describe him than a milkmaid could draw cows. I suppose we distinguish one waiter from another much as we pick our hat from the rack. We could have plotted a murder safely before William. He never presumed to have any opinions of his own. When such was my mood, he remained silent, and if I announced that something diverting had happened to me, he laughed before I told him what it was. He turned the twinkle in his eye off or on at my bidding as readily as if it was the gas. To my "sure to be wet tomorrow," he would reply, "Yes, sir," and to Trelawney's "it doesn't look like rain," 2 minutes afterward, he would reply, "No, sir." It was one member who said Lightning Rod would win the derby, and another who said Lightning Rod had no chance, but it was William who agreed with both. He was like a cheroot which may be smoked from either end. So used was I to him that had he died or got another situation, or whatever it is such persons do when they disappear from the club, I should probably have told the head waiter to bring him back, as I disliked changes. It would not become me to know precisely when I began to think William an ingrate, but I date his lapse from the evening when he brought me oysters. I detest oysters, and no one knew it better than William. He has agreed with me that he could not understand any gentleman's liking them. Between me and a certain member who smacks his lips 12 times to a dozen of them, William knew I liked a screen to be placed until we had reached the soup, and yet he gave me the oysters and the other man my sardine. Both the other member and I quickly called for brandy and the head waiter. To do William justice, he shook, but never can I forget his audacious explanation. "Beg pardon, sir, but I was thinking of something else." In these words, William had flung off the mask, and now I knew him for what he was. I must not be accused of bad form for looking at William on the following evening. What prompted me to do so was not personal interest in him, but a desire to see whether I dare let him wait on me again. So, recalling that a caster was off a chair yesterday, one is entitled to make sure that it is on today before sitting down. If the expression is not too strong, I may say that I was taken aback by William's manner. Even when crossing the room to take my orders, he let his one hand play nervously with the other. I had to repeat "sardine on toast" twice, and instead of answering "yes, sir," as if my selection of sardine on toast was a personal gratification to him, which is the manner one expects of a waiter, he glanced at the clock, then out at the window, and starting, asked, "Did you say sardine on toast, sir?" It was the height of summer, when London smells like a chemist's shop, and he who has the dinner table at the window needs no candles to show him his knife and fork. I lay back at intervals, now watching a starved-looking woman sleep on a doorstep and again complaining of the club bananas. By and by I saw a girl of the commonest kind, ill-clad and dirty as all these Arabs are. Their parents should be compelled to feed and clothe them comfortably, or at least to keep them indoors where they cannot offend our eyes. Such children are for pushing aside with one's umbrella. But this girl I noticed because she was gazing at the club windows. She had stood thus for perhaps 10 minutes when I became aware that someone was leaning over me to look out at the window. I turned round. Conceive my indignation on seeing that the rude person was William. "How dare you, William?" I said sternly. He seemed not to hear me. Let me tell, in the measured words of one describing a past incident, what then took place. To get nearer the window, he pressed heavily on my shoulder. "William, you forget yourself," I said, meaning, as I see now, that he had forgotten me. I heard him gulp, but not to my reprimand. He was scanning the street. His hands chattered on my shoulder, and pushing him from me, I saw that his mouth was agape. "What are you looking for?" I said. He stared at me, and then, like one who had at last heard the echo of my question, seemed to be brought back to the club. He turned his face from me for an instant, and then answered shakily, I beg your pardon, sir. I shouldn't have done it. Are the bananas too ripe, sir?" He recommended the nuts, and awaited my verdict so anxiously while I ate one that I was about to speak graciously, when I again saw his eyes drag him to the window. "William," I said, my patience giving way at last, "I dislike being waited on by a melancholy waiter." "Yes, sir," he replied, trying to smile, and then broke out passionately, "For God's sake, sir, tell me, have you seen a little girl looking in at the club windows?" He had been a good waiter once, and his distracted visage was spoiling my dinner. "There," I said, pointing to the girl, and no doubt would have added that he must bring me coffee immediately had he continued to listen. But already he was beckoning to the child. I have not the least interest in her. Indeed, it had never struck me that waiters had private affairs, and I still think it a pity that they should have. But as I happened to be looking out at the window, I could not avoid seeing what occurred. As soon as the girl saw William, she ran into the street, regardless of vehicles, and nodded 3 times to him. Then she disappeared. I have said that she was quite a common child, without attraction of any sort, and yet it was amazing the difference she made in William. He gasped relief, like one who had broken through the anxiety that checks breathing, and into his face there came a silly laugh of happiness. I had dined well, on the whole, so I said, "I'm glad to see you cheerful again, William." I meant that I approved his cheerfulness because it had helped my digestion, but he must needs think I was sympathising with him. "Thank you, sir," he answered. "Oh, sir, when she nodded and I saw it was all right, I could have gone down on my knees to God." I was as much horrified as if he had dropped a plate on my toes. Even William, disgracefully emotional as he was at the moment, flung out his arms to recall the shameful words. "Coffee, William," I said sharply. I sipped my coffee indignantly, for it was plain to me that William had something on his mind. "You are not vexed with me, sir," he had the hardihood to whisper. "It was a liberty," I said. I know, sir, but I was beside myself. That was a liberty also." He hesitated and then blurted out, "It's my wife, sir, she—" I stopped him with my hand. William, who I had favoured in so many ways, was a married man. I might have guessed as much years before had I ever reflected about waiters, for I knew vaguely that his class did this sort of thing. His confession was distasteful to me, and I said warningly, "Remember where you are, William."
"Yes, sir, but you see, she's so delicate."
"Delicate? I forbid you speaking to me on unpleasant topics."
"Yes, sir, begging your pardon."